It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Uncle Jamie brings us our quick tip of the week with, in many text editors on the Mac, you can hold down the Option key when selecting text with the mouse. This allows you to select a rectangular block of text that includes parts of multiple lines. Once selected, the usual cut, copy, and paste operations apply. This is particularly useful if your text includes column-oriented information. I've used this in BB Edit today, but it also works in Text Edit, Pages, Preview, and even Microsoft Word. This has been around for decades, but I bet many people didn't know you could do this. More tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1066 for Monday, December 2nd, 2024.
Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in tips like that. We share them. You send in cool stuff found. We share that too. You send in your questions. We try to answer those. The goal being that each of us learns at least five new things every single time we get together. Sometimes we even play that sound. Sponsors for this episode include coda.io/MGG. That's one doc to rule them all. You can bring all your text and tables together. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, as usual. We'll see what ChatGPT has me say about that, because I have ChatGPT write me ad scripts. And most of the time, you hear me reading them cold. So I don't know what I'm about to say until I say it most of the time. So here on, yes, it's today, December 2nd is World Computer Literacy Day. But perhaps even better, it is also both National Skip School Day and National Bartender Appreciation Day. So right, I know what to do if you're skipping school today, I guess. I don't know. Depends on which school you're skipping, I suppose. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here in the frigid white north of Anchorage, Alaska, is Pilot Pete and show 1066. Notify the medical examiner. Whew. I told you last week it was dark, folks.
Oh, okay. So that matches the one I came up with in the list I look at, which is check officers' well-being.
There you go.
That's a nicer way of saying it, maybe. You know, yeah. Less direct, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully we won't need one as cold as it is, and I've got a late summer windbreaker with me, just in case I need it.
Yeah, Your schedule has been bounced around like crazy on this trip.
Yes, I started off in Dubai, where it was a pleasant 85 degrees, and Mumbai, India, where it reached almost 90. I'm not planning on going to Anchorage on this one.
And yet?
Here I am. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What did I do to myself here? I hid the chapters document, which was not a good thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Our giveaway, you're going to have to, we are recording this ahead of December 1st, and even though it's the 2nd, because of the Thanksgiving holiday, we're doing this
I was going to ask how your Thanksgiving was, Dave.
Over a week early. My Thanksgiving was fantastic, mind you.
There you go.
Yep. I'm happy to speak about the future in the past. So I don't have the details on our giveaway, but you can go to macgeekup.com/giveaway and sign up for the new giveaway, because it happens every month. I know there is one. I know who it is, but I just don't have the details, so I'm not going to announce it yet in case something happens between now and then. Porthos John does have a tip for us that Adam's going to share next after this. But PC Unix says, if you have added ChatGPT to Siri on your iPhone, you can, if you have those instances where you ask Siri a question and she says, I can't tell you that, while you're driving or at any time, you could say, hey, S lady, using ChatGPT, please tell me X. And that will force it. I've tried this in the current builds of 18 point whatever that I'm running. It works. It automatically goes to ChatGPT and gets you a response. So that is great tip. Thank you, PC.
That's a beta feature right now, though, right? You have to be running the beta. I don't think that's been officially released,
I think you're right. Well, I am running the beta. I am on 18.2. Yeah. But
it's coming for the rest of you, but you kind of can get on the beta. I think it's even probably part of the public beta. You know,
it is in the public beta.
So just be aware of that.
Yeah. No. Good call. Thank you for saying that. Yep.
Well, here is Porthos John. He has a tip for us. He says, disable .ds store on network drives. Exactly what the title says. It's in some utilities, but super important if you use a NAS or Dropbox, Google Drive, etc. In terminal, you have to type a default writes command. We'll put it in the show notes, but it's default writes com.apple.desktopservers.dns. Don't write network stores, and then boolean true. This is super important for syncing, as non-Macs will consider this file as a regular hidden file, and it will version it, meaning that every time you change a file, or if you have a really complex folder structure that is deep, can mean lots and lots of changes to those files, tying up versioning and syncing. Also note that even with show all files in the Finder, or showing hidden files, .ds store will not show up in the Finder, but will show up on network drives and other operating systems. So, you know, that pesky .ds store file, anybody who lives in the, you know, Linux, Unix world also knows about that. I was hoping to do, I forgot to do a little research. I wanted to do some research on this and remind everybody what's in that. But I think on the Mac, right, that stores like folder name and information and icon. It's like the things about the files and folders, right?
You're right that it's the things about the files and folders. What I thought it stored was locations. Like if you, like in the window, if you were to rearrange things in an icon-based window, it stores that kind of stuff. But there, probably other things. But but yes, it's metadata. But it is available, as he said, in utilities like Onyx, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. That's probably the easiest place to do it. When I did this in Onyx and checked the box, it told me I needed to restart my Mac in order for this to take effect. So just be aware of that. But it is a good thing, like you said, for versioning and things like that. You don't want it to just go nuts versioning those files.
Yeah, it's also like another thing that I do is just because it's unnecessary. You know, if you use a FTP service or you're doing like syncing or something to some external drive that doesn't need those folders, like I have my transmit automatically set to filter out .ds store files. So when I'm doing like a sync on an FTP, I'm not like sending up a bunch of files. That's very much a Mac only file. Like only your Mac needs that file.
Yeah, right. Right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Awesome. Your Mac does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right.
Well, Porthos John sent in another one. He hit the trifecta today, actually. But this one is cool because if you've ever tried to help somebody do something with an iPhone and they're telling you what they see, but they're not very descriptive, you're just pulling your hair out going, I can't help you. I'm sorry. Here's how you can remote control an iPhone. You can't natively control an iPhone remotely. You can only view the screen, but here's how it works. If everyone's on the latest Mac OS and iOS, you can remote control an iPhone and help support by having your family member enable and activate iPhone mirroring on their Mac. And then you start screen sharing from your Mac to theirs. You use the most common way to do it is to use what their Apple ID is. That's how you get your screen sharing to work. And that's it. You'll be able to control the phone via the screen sharing and mirroring. Be able to see.
That's smart.
They're making it easier and easier. It's brilliant. I mean, how many times have you tried to help me, Dave? And I'm like, oh, this is what I'm looking at.
You know, I was trying
to
help.
You could see what I'm looking at.
I was trying to help my dad the other night with something that I'll talk about as we get deeper into the episode here. But it was something we had to do on his Mac and then on his iPhone. And on his Mac, I just screen shared and looked at it, and it was a weird thing. And then when we got to his iPhone, I was like, dude, I can't. Like, we're going to have to do this, like, the hack and slash way, because I can't see what you're seeing, and this is going to be frustration. So
yeah, if only he could have had.
If only I knew about this.
Screen mirroring on, yeah.
Well, I have more on this later, because this is a frustration for me. So we'll get into this in a later section when we talk about my mom. But just remind everybody that you can share an iPhone screen, iOS screen, in FaceTime. So...
What?
Yes.
You can?
Yeah, there's a button for it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's been for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. See, this is why
you have to be on a FaceTime call.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
There's a little screen share button.
I used to try that on my mom's iPad, and I never had good luck with it.
Let Adam finish. Yeah. What were you saying?
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'm just saying there's a little share content button in the little control panel.
Oh.
Looks like the two little screens.
Wait, like right on the FaceTime screen? I feel like I haven't seen this. Okay, I believe you. I'm just trying to get enough context cues. Yeah.
I'll grab the article.
Great.
from Apple.
Yeah, cool. Pete, what were you saying?
Yeah, you can't control. You're not controlling the screen. Just to be clear, because Porthos Jones, people get confused on this. This is not screen control. This is just mirroring.
Right. No, that part.
You can tell them. You see those little dots? Touch those.
Okay.
You can tell them what to do.
You know what? But later, I'm going to FaceTime call you, Pete, and you're going to walk me through touching the dots so I can share my phone screen with you.
There you go. Let's do it.
Oh, I think I'm up next. I was trying to do the edit and put the link in there, but let me do this first.
Yeah, do this first. It's all good.
So our next tip is from, why do I not have a person in there?
I thought you just found this, but maybe somebody else found it. I know somebody in our Discord found
it. Oh, I know. I'll grab it. This is, someone found out that you can install large files from the App Store on an external drive.
It was Steve Hammond in
Discord.
And
it was Steve.
Yeah.
Somehow I didn't get the name on there, but... And I just found this. It was actually from a Mac Rumors article. So we'll try to make sure the link is there, too, to give them credit. But he says, if you're running out of space on your Mac's internal drive, macOS Sequoia 15.1 includes a handy new feature that lets you install large apps directly to external storage. Here's how you could use it to preserve space on your boot drive. You connect your external drive to your Mac, obviously. Open the App Store, click App Store in the menu bar, and select Settings. Check the box next to download and install large apps to a separate disk. And then you select the external drive that you want to use from the drop-down menu. Boom, you're done. Now, of course, this only works with apps that are larger than 1 gigabyte. You need to be aware that the external drive has to be obviously connected to enable this setting. The drive should be formatted in APFS format. And then depending upon the app, some apps actually store like data is still stored on your main drive. So we're just talking about super large apps in and of themselves. So I would imagine, things like games or anything that's a super large application.
Okay. Huh. That's actually a really nice change. I mean, it would be nicer. It's a good step, right?
It's a step forward.
It's a step forward. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's good. Good stuff. Richard has a tip for us. He says, I like using Freeform on the iPad, but it's always been difficult to use for me, he says, on a desktop Mac without a trackpad, as there was no easy way to pan around inside a Freeform canvas. However, with macOS 15.1, this has now changed. You can press the space bar while dragging on the canvas to pan around. So it kind of toggles you back and forth between selecting mode or clicking mode and grabbing with your hand, your virtual hand, and moving the canvas around when you hold the space bar down. This is a very nice improvement. Oh, that's great. I got to get into Freeform more. I have a feeling. I know you use it, right, Adam?
I have not, because I don't have anybody to use it with. This is the problem with Apple creates these great technologies, right? But like I work in an office with people on Macs, people on PCs, like you know, so we end up using tools like Zoom instead of FaceTime or, you know. That's, you know, the problem with the Apple ecosystem is they don't make this stuff cross-platform. And I think they need to grow out of that at some point, right? If they want to build collaborative tools, they need to be truly collaborative with everybody. They can't be in the walled garden or restricted to the walled garden.
It's fair. It's why all these cross-platform, you know, lives in your web browser tools are as popular as they are because they work with everyone. Like our sponsor, Coda, right? Like, I mean, it's right. One of the things that's the beauty of it is get yourself in front of a web browser and you're done. Like, then you can start, but you're done with the friction. I mean, like,
another great example is like, you know, Keynote Pages and Numbers. You can now do it with the web. Yes. So at least they opened that up. But I mean, that's great for personal stuff probably, but at an office that really doesn't work. So like, I love Numbers. I prefer Numbers way more than Excel when I'm doing stuff. So I do everything in Numbers at work and then just export out to an Excel file when I need to give it to a
Do you ever have any and then go the other way. Exporting to Excel?
No, because the stuff I'm doing with Excel is nothing complex. Gotcha. I'm doing like web developer stuff, which is just like data mapping or something, you know, like it's just simple columns and rows. I'm not doing any fancy stuff, so it's not generally an issue.
Yeah, I find that I need to not. I have Numbers. I prefer Numbers like you. I use it for all of the spreadsheets that are only for me. A lot of them are personal, like it's where I have my list of IP addresses and, you know, that sort of thing, which is great because I can easily pull it up on my phone or wherever and it just works. But for anything that I need to share with anyone, even if they're also a Mac user, I either use I don't pay for Excel and Word. I don't pay for Microsoft Office, but I do use LibreOffice, which is absolutely fantastic. It feels like a Mac app. So it's, you know, it's part of the open office thing. It is freely available for you to use. And it is a perfect clone of Excel and Word and PowerPoint and, you know, all of those things. I mainly only use it for Excel documents, but it's spreadsheets that I wind up sharing around. And you can set it to save. By default, it saves in like the open doc format or something. I set it to save in XLSX format, and so it effectively acts like native Excel. When I pull things in, I save them out. There's no import export. It's just open save. So, but I either use that or, like I said, Google Drive to share spreadsheets, or Synology Office, where you can like self-host your own web spreadsheets too. Which is Synology Office is amazing. The fact that I can do that, you know, on the disk station that lives at my house. And that would be the case with the disk stations that live at all of our houses. Like the you've got the 423 plus, I think, Adam and Pete.
Yep. Love it.
Yeah.
I've got the 1815.
That's it. Yeah. I think you can even run it on that. Yeah. So, it's Synology Office is awesome. We use it entirely for one of the businesses I have instead of Google Docs. Google Sheets, because we didn't, when we started the business, we're like, why would we want Google to have access to all this data whenever they want it? Like, and I know they say they don't, but like, if it's stored on their servers, they could, so it's like, well, I can just do it here. It's like, yeah, fine. And it's all web browsers, just the same way. So anyway,
what's the saying? There's no cloud. It's just someone else's computer.
That's it. Exactly. So that, yeah. And Synology Office is really a cloud-based thing. It just runs on my computer that I can, you know, I'm the only one that touches it. And if I need to, I can also unplug it from the internet myself.
Yep. Well, right. Speaking of security, here's that trifecta from Porthos John. He has one last one for us. He says, I know it has been mentioned before, but my life with wife and kids has been changed because of this. No more nagging to log them into Hulu, Netflix, etc. I set up password sharing, and this is the new password sharing and the new password app for Mac and iOS. He said, I set up a password sharing group for the family group and put Wi-Fi, Hulu, Netflix, and the rest in the shared group. Added bonus that when I change a password and save it, the changed password is changed for the shared group. Most interestingly, if there is a two-factor multi-factor authentication via a code, you can share the code generator if you are using the password app for it, obviously, in the shared group, too. He says, I have mixed feelings about this last one from a security angle, so I would advise be careful and don't get caught with the codes, because you really don't want those falling into nefarious hands. And I love this because I think I told you guys earlier, you know, I have 1Password family, obviously, and I love 1Password and I'm going to stick with 1Password. But for the life of me, I gave it all to my family. I showed them how to use it and I still get like, yeah, I didn't install the app or I don't understand how it works or whatever. So, I mean, at the end of the day, this is kind of a Sherlock thing that Apple is doing, in my opinion, a little bit.
Sure.
But the advantage is once it's in there, it's integrated into the operating system in a way that, like, it's going to just fill those passwords in. It's just going to prompt them and say, do you want to log into this thing? I already know the password. I already know all this stuff, and just do it. And again, 1Password does all that stuff too, but it does it a little bit differently. And it's not obviously can't be as tightly integrated as what Apple does. So I'm going to totally do this because, like, I get those calls. I'm trying to get into Netflix or, you know,
I'm
Disney Plus or whatever
sure
it is.
Sure, we're not married to the same family, Adam. Just saying. What's the code?
And it's like, I put it in 1Password. It's in 1Password. You guys can grab it.
I don't know how to use that.
Yeah, exactly.
My family's.
I showed them how to use it.
My family's capable of using 1Password. Like, if I say I put it in 1Password, that ends the conversation.
That was my hope.
And they log in. However, when I look over at least some of their shoulders, I see this absolute mess of a combination of 1Password and this. And if I, Lisa's going to probably get mad at me for calling her out, but if I ask Lisa, hey, what's your Apple ID password, which of course I also have in my 1Password separately, because it comes up all the time. But if I'm at her computer, I ask her, what's your Apple ID password? I get this, and it's like, why is this that moment? Like, this is a simple thing. Well, I think I have it stored in 4 different places and I don't know which one is current and this, that, and the other. It's like, okay, never mind. I look it up on my phone. Like, this is your password. So, like, the fact that Apple also has a password manager is the problem. If 1Password was the only one on her computer or their computers, then it wouldn't be an issue. It'd be like, oh yeah, we just use 1Password. It's totally fine. But it's the mix of both. And I know you can turn off Apple's, but it's on by default. And because of that, they've all got some passwords in there. So I can't just like say, turn it off. So yeah, I've toyed with the idea of moving everything to Apple passwords, and it's gotten to a point now where it's robust enough that maybe.
Well, it's its own app now. Right? Literally its own app.
Yeah. As opposed to just the keychain.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But the way it's sharing and the fact that you can do groups and all of those things, it's like, okay, what would I miss if I moved to this? And, some of the shared notes or the secure notes and like my driver's license, my passport, those kinds of things, I can't yet store.
The good news is you and I, we can use both.
Yes.
We just don't have to force our other family members to use it. We can just give them the...
That's the key. Yeah. I've also thought about setting up my own Bitwarden self-hosted on my Synology. I actually do. I have it running, but I don't use it. But Bitwarden is, a password manager that is server-based and you can run it for free if you have a Synology.
That's what we use at work because we have to be PCI and all that stuff. Yeah, we can't. I mean, we literally don't put stuff in the cloud for very good reasons.
Mm. So your Bitwarden is self-hosted, and that way you can check all the right boxes.
Yeah, and our CIO controls it. And,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Oh, yeah.
It's on our servers, in our racks, in our, like, so like you said, if there's a problem, you can unplug it.
All right, folks, look, you know I love my tech, right? Well, when it comes to organizing chaos, our sponsor Coda is the go-to tool one of my other businesses uses when we need to keep things organized. It's like having a command center for your team, bringing documents, spreadsheets, and apps into one single platform. No more chasing stray emails or wondering who updated the roadmap. Coda keeps it all in one place, synced up, and easy to find. We use Coda to manage planning cycles, track our metrics, and even collaborate on roadmaps in real time. And let me tell you, their template gallery is wild. It's so good, I have expected to recommend my next snack. Dave, try these high-protein donuts while you plan your next big project. Mmm, donuts. Don't get caught juggling tools that don't talk to each other. Check out Coda, then get your team working like a well-oiled machine, and maybe even a well-fed one, too. Coda empowers your startup to strategize, plan, and track goals effectively. Take advantage of this limited-time offer just for startups. Go to coda.io/MGG today and get 6 free months, wow, of the team plan. That's coda.io/MGG to get started for free and to get 6 free months of the team plan. Yeah, coda.io/MGG. And our thanks to Coda for sponsoring this episode. Shall we do some questions? Yeah, Adam.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a question from Larry. He wants to know, he says, hey, geeks. Hey, who are you calling geeks? It's been a while. It's also been a while since I've listened to the podcast. Well, welcome back. Glad you're here. I've been spending time with political podcasts. Oh, yeah. No. Welcome back.
Welcome back for sure. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
To that same old place that you talked about. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, no problem.
What time is it in the morning for you, Pete, over there?
Yeah, it's a little after 6.
A little after 6.
A little after 6 a.m.
And we've been, yeah. Okay, so that explains it.
A little over an hour. Yeah.
That explains it. Yeah.
My Christmas gift to you is I won't do that again.
Okay, don't do that again. Let's help Larry here. He says, anyhow, I went to use my PDF pen on my iPad, but it's crashing. So I went to look and see if maybe there was an update, but there is nothing in the App Store. I searched for them online, but can't find. All the other PDF apps are using the search term PDF pen to lure people in. I imagine they're truly gone. Yes, they are. Larry, they've moved to a different company and the app still exists, but it's different. They've got more of a business focus, I believe, from what I remember.
I think it's Nitro, right?
Nitro is the new company. And I think they're very much more focused on business than personal use, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I figured we would basically know because you proselytize for them so much. Back in the day. So, the only reason why I even tried opening it up is because I'm having a problem with a fillable ebook. This is a journal that we were given at work to see if there was a fillable version, as I do not write with a pen.
Oh, okay.
They said they were looking into creating one. Oh, okay, so it's not a fillable version. They were looking into creating one, and after a few weeks, I got it. I'm trying to fill it in using books, however, and I have to click on each line as it does not automatically go to the next line. Okay, so he's working with his PDF in the Books app, I guess. Also, it starts to pick up a letter, of course, even if I am in the middle of a sentence. For some reason, I cannot click in the middle of the line if I need to edit something in the middle of a sentence. And finally, when I try to fill in something down the lower portion of the page, the keyboard covers up the page. Yeah, it's all really annoying. I'm wondering if there's anything, I'm wondering if they did something wrong in creating this. Any suggestions about what to do, or maybe a different app? Thinking the latter is going to be the better answer here, but I'll get your guys' opinions. I have all the regular standby PDF programs. Maybe you have a recommendation of one.
Yeah. So Dave and I both answered this. And I don't know. Dave, maybe you remember. Have we mentioned on the show before there's this thing called SetApp?
Yeah. And once or twice.
Yeah, okay. So it is a subscription. And so I'm sorry to say, Larry, I know you don't like subscriptions, but this is one that is, I've found to be well worth it. Great value at twice the price. Oh, sorry. Don't do that setup. Just kidding.
Yeah, keep it where it is. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. So, no, fantastic value because of all the wonderful programs that they do make available. And one of them happens to be Nitro PDF Pro. Now,
oh, so that's the 90%, one.
Yeah, that's the
like
one.
That's the now, one that has, PDF Pen became.
And it has 90% positive rating on 2,500 reviews. And there were some scathing reviews in there. I got to say that I was kind of like, eh. You know, I'm sorry to see that, but I too use PDF Expert. Expensive? Yeah. Now, ooh, if you know anybody that's got an EDU email address, .edu, I used my daughter's .edu and got a substantial discount. Huh? You're looking at the guy, if you're watching on YouTube, who's paying the tuition, so I don't feel too badly about taking that discount.
Fair.
And you know what? If she was buying it, I'd be paying for it. So I'm paying for it either way.
Yeah.
But I find myself using PDF Expert so often that I'm almost looking for PDFs to go edit.
It's so good.
Were we talking about PDF Expert or PDF Pen Pro?
PDF Expert.
Okay, I got confused there. It sounded like you were recommending the Nitro app.
In the answer to Larry in the email, I said, you know, I don't use this, but it's got mostly good ratings.
I got you.
Did find some poor ratings in it, though, that were kind of like, oh, really? So I can't give it a fair and honest review. I haven't used
it.
But I did see that there was an editor, PDF Nitro Pro, in that app.
Got you. I got lost there a little bit. Yeah, Nitro. Smile sold PDF Pen to this company, Nitro, a few years back. So that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
And they took it over, and they've done a bunch of things with it, from what I understand. And like you said, in the community, there's a lot of mixed reviews because we had a lot of love for Smile and this product, and now it's different. So I think that's where a lot of that is just coming from.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I can't tell you if it's good, bad, or the other because I moved on as well.
I can tell you that I moved on, I think, either right before or right about the time that Smile sold PDF Pen, because I had to edit some PDFs while I was traveling, and I had PDF Pen, of course, because that's, you know, they were a sponsor for a long time. They were the ultimate PDF editor for a long time. Yeah. And I was like, man, this is so frustrating. Like it took, I was able to get it done, but it was always a little bit, and this was always true. You know, PDFs are janky. You've got to figure out. I'm like, I wonder if somebody's figured this out. And that's when I tried PDF Expert. And it was like, oh, yeah, the answer is yes. Someone has figured it out. I haven't looked back. I can't imagine not.
It's intuitive.
Yeah. And it just, it's smooth. It's friction free. Even when you're editing stuff, it's, So, yes, it's expensive and worth it. Says the guy who gets a free review copy. So I should state that I don't think I've ever paid for PDF Expert, but I would if faced with the decision, I would pay for it. I might already have. I can't remember. I definitely got a free review copy initially. I don't know if that's continued. I can't remember.
Right.
I spend a lot of money on things, so this might be one of them.
So do I, Dave.
True.
I spent a lot of money on things too.
Yeah, I know. It's true. Yeah.
Just ask my wife.
Right. Yeah. So
when we're saying expensive, how expensive is expensive?
I think it's over 100 bucks.
I was going to say with the discount, it was 90.
Okay. So it's
$80 a year.
$80 a year or 200 bucks and you're done for life.
And with the discount, I think I paid for it 90.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. You got to do your educational email address. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So,
I mean, hey, if it's good and it's really good, I mean, this is an app from Readle. So for people who don't know Readle, they do Spark and Documents, and they do a lot of great work.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's true.
Yep.
Cool.
I would have no qualms giving them my money.
Right. Right. Yeah. Same. Yeah. As said. Yes, that's right. All right. Should we move on?
Yeah. So Locke Tudor put on Discord a frequent kernel panics, and he says, my aging 27-inch 2019 Intel Mac is having daily kernel panic attacks. I don't know, Dave, we're doctors. Could we prescribe something for that? macOS 15.1, 64 gigs, 2400 megahertz memory. The most recent was Media Analysis D, but previous crashes show Chrome Spotlight Knowledge D, Launch Services D, MD Worker underscore shared, Knowledge Construction D, Photo Analysis D, Pages App, Google Chrome Helper, Bluetooth D, ISD, and several
lots
more.
Lots of apps, yeah.
And a lot of the D, I'm noticing. Oh, so there's a theme there.
Good catch.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a daily occurrence, sometimes multiple times, and it started a couple of months ago. Sometimes it happens when I'm working on something, and other times it'll happen overnight when the computer is idle. Upgrading to Sequoia feels like it made it worse, but I have no hard data. Is this behavior a known issue with a reliable cure? New computer. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to answer that.
No. Luckily, this one came from Discord, and we've mentioned the Mac Geek Gab Discord numerous times. This is a great place to go to get support, help from the community, just a great community in general. So I encourage people to sign up or go in there if you haven't. I mean, you don't have to sign up. You just got to go in and join the Discord.
MacGeekGab.com/Discord. Yep.
Yeah, it's free to join. There's no cost. Just come hang out with everybody. But that's where, like, Porthos John chimed in on this question, and he definitely had what I think is the right answer. He says, in my experience on Intel Macs, kernel panics are most likely, but not always, caused by bad kernel extensions. And maybe not bad kernel extensions. It can be a bad kernel extension, but just maybe old kernel extensions. These are things that different applications use to, like, add functionality at a more root level of the operating system. It's a mechanism for doing that. K-text files, you might have heard of these. But, you know, they can get corrupt or have issues or things can happen. So he says Onyx, which is a great tool, has a rebuild process for the kernel extension cache. And he says, I would try that. There's also a knowledge base article that goes into system and kernel extensions on macOS and what they are and what they're for. So if you want more to know more about these, but just know part of the operating system, things can happen, and Onyx has a tool for rebuilding them. And then R. Stanley in the Discord chat chimed in and said, if you use the Apple menu from the top left of the screen to view about this Mac and then select the system report option, you can scroll down on the left side to the software section and choose extensions, and that will generate a list of these extensions. It can take a while, and you can see the ones that are there and which apps have them and stuff like that. But they both kind of recommended looking into this, and I believe, if I remember from the thread in the Discord, that it did resolve the issue. Running the Onyx tool resolved the issue. So at least for now, you haven't got any more information back on it. But yeah, I mean, another one would be, you know, make sure your applications are up to date. And also the tip from R. Stanley, I would recommend going in and looking at that list, because maybe it's an old application that you installed way back when, and it's having some sort of conflict and you're not even using that app anymore. And then you could uninstall it using Onyx or an uninstaller, you know, like Clean My Mac 10.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of those scenarios where Nuke and Pave starts to, like, this is in support of a Nuke and Pave. If you have especially old kernel extensions, the ones that he mentioned are all, other than Chrome, I think we're all Apple, you know, processes running. But the kernel extension, that cache can absolutely get mucked up. And but if rebuilding the Kext cache did not do it, then, you know, the Nuke and Pave does get rid of all those old kernel extensions sort of by definition, you know. That's how it works. But there is more surgical ways of doing that, like you said, uninstalling with Clean My Mac and all that stuff would be another way to go about it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Nuke and Pave, by the way.
Yeah. I'm not anymore. I mean, not it anymore. Used to be a thing back in the day. I avoid it more often than do it. It's one of those last resort things, in my opinion, at this point. Like if you've exhausted every other solution and you're still having problems, then yeah, I would say go for it. But yeah.
I'm gonna bring us. First of all, Pete, before I sort of expand into a tangent that is actually another question, do you have anything to add to this one?
No, just an observation that we haven't mentioned Onyx. We mention it all the time, but not a whole lot recently, it seems. And I just think it seems to me that everything's gotten so much more stable for the most part with the recent operating systems that's why we don't need to nuke and pave like we used to have to do. So that's just frustrating that his observation is it seems to have gotten worse with Sequoia.
Well, Porthos John is in the chat here too. He's absolutely the MVP of this particular episode.
Right on.
And he notes that these kernel extensions are deprecated in Apple Silicon. But deprecated only means that they will eventually be discontinued. They are not yet discontinued, and you get that warning every time you upgrade your operating system. And it's, here are these kernels, these are going to go away, but we swear, but they haven't gone away yet. And so we're still dealing with this problem, but this is part of why Apple is making those go away. So, things rely on them. I want to bring us to Eric's question. I'm jumping in the agenda for anyone who's watching, which is not many of you, so it doesn't really matter. But Eric brought us back to episode 1062, where Joe had sent in a note and asking, should I start fresh with a new computer or just use Migration Assistant? And all of us said, use Migration Assistant. Eric wrote in and said, well, I don't know about that advice, and I'm actually conflating Eric's email with several others, and so Eric, please allow me some creative liberties with putting words in your mouth. But the general gist was, hey, if you're moving from Intel to Apple Silicon, I've always heard the advice to be absolutely do a nuke and pave so that you have your fresh apps and all that, and I know that was probably something we even said back when Apple Silicon was first a thing, but I wouldn't say that anymore. All the apps that are out there are fat binaries, and the operating system Migration Assistant still works, but that's just me. What do you think, Adam?
A couple years ago, I don't remember when it was, whenever the first M1 MacBook Air came out, I got one of those for my wife, and she had an old Intel Mac Mini, like a 2014, I think it was, or something like that. And I migrated her, and she's been using it ever since. And I remember zero issues.
Yeah.
That's all I can speak to. Like, I don't know, but like, I only from experience, like I did the easy route, just Migrations Assisted to her from that to that. And
done.
Went on with my life.
I took the easy route here in the studio a year ago when the 2019 Intel iMac died from lightning, right? And I replaced it with this Mac Studio, obviously an Apple Silicon machine. And I didn't have time. I hadn't carved out time to do any of that, nor financial budget either. So time budget and money budget didn't exist to do the thing that I had to do. And, my setup in the studio here is not vanilla. I have, two, three Thunderbolt hubs, a Thunderbolt audio interface, three displays, all kinds of weird stuff under the hood, software audio devices with, like, loopback and all those things that are a juggling act to keep stable, right? And so, changing operating systems, I'm still not on 15 on this computer because it ain't broke. And so changing
fix it till it is, Dave.
Well, I know, but that's the thing is I changed out the core hardware of it And it just dropped in seamlessly. There was nothing to do. So, speaking, as you said, Adam, from experience, I probably would have done it if I planned for it all, but I didn't plan and didn't do it. Right. And still here, a year and a half later, obviously it's working mostly fine. Hang on. I needed to knock on some wood there. Yeah, yeah. I want to make sure this episode actually records, but...
And it kind of dovetails with my earlier comment, and that, you know, it's seems perfectly stable. I used to be a huge fan of Nuke and Pave, and I haven't in a while either. And it's been, thank you, Apple.
I advocated for it. I was a fan is probably going too far, but like, you know, every couple of years I would do it, like, you know, at like the third or fourth time I was doing install over upgrade. I'd just be, it's just time. But, you know, toward the end, it became mostly about that was my forced spring cleaning. That was my way to force myself to really not reinstall apps that I hadn't opened in 3 years or not have a bunch of crud in my application support folder or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still good for housekeeping. Like Dave was saying, if you're like, man, I just want to clean house. And you haven't done it in years and years and years. It's a good way to go because it forces you. You're going to spend a lot of time.
Yeah.
Not as much time as you think, but you're still going to spend time. Yeah.
More than a installer. Sorry, Pete. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you've got a 256 or 512 hard drive in your laptop, then you're probably going to be more likely to do that. You know, it also makes us lazy that they give us 1 and 2 terabyte options and more.
That was the hardest part for me, because I think I had at least a 1 terabyte drive in that 2019 iMac. Studio that I bought is the base model M1 Max Mac Studio with a 512 gig internal drive. Now, I have gobs of external storage hanging off of this thing. But I still, Migration Assistant does not care about that. So that was the tricky part. And thankfully, I was able to make that work, because I think I had about 600 gigs of data on my internal drive. Right. I was like, all right, that I had to do for obvious reasons.
Now you
got to
get choosy.
Yeah. So I made a backup of it to my Synology, and then just started hacking and slashing. It's like, I don't need this anymore. Don't need this. Move this to the external drive. Crap. Need another external drive. Okay, here it is. You know, those kinds of things. So yeah. It was, as far as when this comes out, it was Thanksgiving. As far as we're concerned, it will be Thanksgiving. Language and tense is so weird. But I know a lot of us will be helping our family members over Thanksgiving. It turns out you and I, Adam, are trendsetters this year. So
pre-Thanksgiving
tech support for our family members. But
oh, man.
Go.
Let me tell you this story. I told the guys this story, but yeah, I got a panicked call in the middle of the day from my mom, you know, and you're like, oh my God, what's wrong? Who died? Like, what happened? And no, she's like, I'm at the grocery store. Like, okay, here we go. And she was literally at the grocery store. I could hear the checker in the line. She had gone to a grocery store she normally doesn't go to. And she's trying to get a discount on her turkey. She's buying the turkey for Thanksgiving. I'm going out there to be with her and my daughter for Thanksgiving. And they had something like some discount, like you buy $25 worth of groceries and then you can get 99 cents a pound on your turkey instead of $2.99 a pound or whatever they like. So it was like not an insignificant savings. But she gets up to like check out and she's qualifying and they're like, well, you have to have our app. And so she's trying, like in the grocery store, trying to download, install the app. Like we talked about with the passwords earlier, it then prompts her for her Apple password, which that's a whole new thing that I have to resolve when I get there. Cause I don't know why for a free app download, she has it set up to require a password to like download the app, but the app store wants her iCloud password. Well, she doesn't know her password. And before she called me,
the checker just said, well, you don't know your password, just reset it. So she reset her iCloud password in line at the grocery store. Oh. And now she can't log in. She can't download the app. They're not going to give her the discount. It was like this whole thing. And I was just like, God, why? Just give her the discount, right? But, you know, they're making old ladies download apps in the middle of it's just like, So then I had to deal with, so where this really goes, though, and where the tip and the information for everybody else is who might need to do support, is that when she finally got the app, or when she finally got home, right, she ended up having to pay full price for the turkey, by the way. They wouldn't give her the stupid discount without the stupid app. Yeah, just, I don't know what happened to customer service, but anyway. So she gets the turkey, gets home. I said, I'll call you later. We'll get this all sorted out. We got to get your password, you know, and I know her password, her old password. Cause like you, Dave, I have it stored in 1Password.
Cause of
I
course.
Have to help her and I know she's not going to remember it, you know? And, but she had changed it to whatever, you know, who knows what it is. And, so luckily there's a couple things to be aware of this. So if this happens to you or someone you know, luckily she had changed the password on her iPhone. She also happened to have an iPad. She doesn't have a Mac. She has an iPad, and that was still logged in. So if you have another device where you're already logged into iCloud, and even if you change your password, you can change it again. You can go into that device. So I had her go into her iPad, go into settings, go into her account, and just change the password again to something that we could both know. And so she was able to change it that way. But what I didn't know is you can also change the password on a borrowed device. And I think I accidentally closed my window that had this information up. But there's an article on Apple's support where you can actually go into a borrowed device with the Apple support app. And so you download the Apple support app, and it has an option that you can go into to help somebody else change their password. Now, they have to have a known device with them, like their iPhone or whatever, because it's going to send a confirmation to them. So they, you could either, you know, hand them your device and they can go into the App Store and do it themselves and reset the password from there. And I didn't know that was a thing. So yeah, you actually can help somebody with the Apple support app change their Apple password, their Apple ID password.
Yeah, you launch the Apple support app, support tools, reset password, help someone else. Look at that. Huh. That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Huh. So I learned something. I mean, at least I learned something, but like grocery stores and people out there, just help older ladies. Just like give them the discount. It's not going to kill you.
Right. Like, yeah. She qualified other than not having the app.
They didn't get her phone number. Yeah, they needed to be able to track data. Her.
Right, they didn't track her. Yeah. That's where the value is for them.
Yeah, the discount wasn't for spending $25. It was for giving us your data.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Groceries are expensive, America. Just like, let's be kind to each other. Can we just be nice to each other for a little bit? Not corporate shills.
So, yeah, it's true. My dad texted me the other day. It was like Sunday or something. Oh, yeah. I was in the middle of like an all-day video shoot with this band. And so he texts me and he's like, I haven't gotten mail on. He has his own domain and he got it before Google stopped allowing free accounts for their Google apps for domains. So he still has it grandfathered as his email all goes through Google. And he texts me on Sunday and he's like, I haven't gotten email since Friday on my personal account. And I'm like, what? Okay. And so I'm not in front of a computer. I'm not really in a spot where I can stop and do this. But, you know, idly in my head, I'm thinking, okay, did his domain get like expired somehow? Did he not do the thing that you got to click a button and log in and, as an admin once every 6 months or, you know, whatever. Did he not do that? Or is his mailbox full? Like, did he use his whatever it is, the 15 gigs that you get with those free accounts with Google? Like, any of these things could be possible. So I'm like, all right. So I forgot about it on Sunday because he texted me early in the day, and then, you know, we had like an 8-hour shoot or whatever. Monday, I'm like, oh, okay, I gotta look. It's late on Monday night. I know he's asleep. So I dig in, and obviously he's being very patient, not getting his email, which is nice, I suppose. I wish I could be that patient if I wasn't getting email. Actually, that's a really nice place to be. Now I have goals, right. Which, you know, I want to be more like my dad, which is sort of my goal every day. But so I logged in and looked in the admin interface for his domain, and nope, everything's fine there. Then I logged into his email account because it turns out I still had his password. Nope, he's got, you know, 8 gigs free of his 15. Okay, so that's not the issue. And I can see in the web interface messages that have poured in, including the test message that I sent him on Sunday. You know, it's like trying to do this. Like, okay. Yep. All right, great. So we just got to figure this out. And I know his password hasn't changed too. And in Google, you can look at the devices that are either logged in or recently logged out. Yep. And I see my computer is the only one that has an active session. Everything else, including his iPhone and other Macs, which I'm assuming are, you know, are his, are all showing as logged out as of the day that he last got emails. So it's like, okay, this is all checking out with a huge question mark. Why? You know, and right. And why is it not just asking him to log in again? So we screen shared to his Mac. And I controlled it. I did it with the iMessage, you know, the messages app screen sharing. It worked totally fine.
Yep.
And so we did that, and I logged into his Mac, and I was like, this is really weird. And I was able to I turned the account off in internet settings and then turned it back on. And at that moment, that's when I got the, you need to log back in. And so, great. So we logged back in with his existing password, and boom, email filled up on his Mac. It's like, okay, sure. And it's like, okay, but I'm like, what about your iPhone? Did that like open the floodgates for you? No. And this was where, you know, I'm trying to walk him through, but I don't know. I don't even know what I really did on his Mac to get it to ask to reauthenticate his account. So, And I don't know how to replicate what I don't know on his iPhone, especially flying blind, playing the operator game. You know, tell me what you're seeing on your iPhone.
Right. Yeah.
And my daughter had just gotten home for her 2-week thing. And I'm like, I don't want to, like, I love talking to my dad, but I don't want to, like, take an hour and a half away from my daughter to go to, like, my dad's house and fix this and all this stuff. So I was like, all right, Dad, we're just going to delete the account from your phone and re-add it, because that's going to do this. And then he's like, yeah, that sounds fine. And he's fairly technically savvy, you know. And so he's like, great, yeah, I know how to do that. So I stayed on the phone with him, obviously, and he deleted the account, re-added it, of course, like it should when you add an account. It told him you have to go and, like, authenticate with the OAuth Google stuff. And like, yep. And he did it. And he's like, yeah, okay, there's my email. I see it. I'm like, great. So, but this was a server side thing. The fact that it happened on both of his devices at exactly the same time. And I looked, there was no notification in his email from Google saying, hey, we noticed X and expired all your existing sessions. But they certainly did expire all his existing sessions. Like, there's no question about it. This was not something he did on one device, because it was both of his devices at exactly the same point in time to the minute. Like, it in the list in Google, it was like, yep, at that minute, everything stopped. So I have a question. I have two questions. Why?
Okay.
Why? Why? Yeah. Did this happen? And I realize these aren't rhetorical, but they may be treated as though they are, because we don't have the answers. So why did this happen? And then the more pressing one is, how can I, like, well, maybe there's two. How can I tell my devices to re-authenticate with Google? And B, why didn't it offer to do that? And I realize these are all, yeah.
What did you call it? My hands up,
Pete. The shrug, shoulder salute.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
There it is. That's the Alfred E. Newman salute. The what? Me worry? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So I know the answer, but if I tell you, Dave, you won't learn anything. So go look it up. who's your buddy? No, so you said he's got a Gmail account, though, right?
Yeah.
It's his own domain with it, hosted at Google. So it is effectively a Gmail account, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So just by coincidence, when I started this trip, I had a day in Memphis, and I have some dear friends there that are well into their 80s now, not super tech savvy. Similar thing. Email just stopped and was over 2 weeks, and I happened to be there, and she's like, not getting email. But all she has is the iPad. So I signed everything out and signed everything back in, and it didn't work. I'm like, you know, let's verify, let's reset your password. Didn't work. And the next morning when I landed in Dubai, I got an email from her, and she said it started working.
Okay. So maybe this problem is more widespread than my dad's one account.
Yeah. That's why when you said Gmail, I went, okay. Yeah.
Well, that's part of why I wanted to share this on the show in case anybody else is running into this. Because clearly, as I said, it happened on the server. So, you know.
Yeah. And with no indication, like.
Right.
That, you know, hey, you've got an error or anything like that. Nothing.
No. Nothing. No, it did say that on his Mac, it's like a lightning bolt or whatever in Mail, Apple Mail. That shows that an account is offline, but in trying to take it online, it wouldn't. And I even looked at the logs, because you can go into like Activity Manager and Mail and then open up like the raw logs of the communication with the Mail server, and there were no errors in. Like, it was weird, man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Hey, shrug.
Yep, moving on.
I have one last thing to add to my. I want to say one last thing about my story, because we mentioned earlier the cool feature where you can use iOS now to like share your screen. So the other thing that, just be aware, if you have parents like my mom, or you're trying to help people like my mom. I've tried to do this so many times with my mom because we're remote, and I'll tell her, let's just get on FaceTime, because I'm trying to like walk her through the interface, right? And she's like not clicking on the right thing or not getting the right thing. And I'm trying to describe it right. But there's just a communication barrier that often happens there. And people who've gone through this probably know exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm like, let's just get on FaceTime and just share your screen. So she was on her iPhone. She was on her iPhone at home talking to me. Right. And inevitably what happens is one of two things. I'll be like, all right, let's FaceTime so then we can share the screen. So she knows how to get on FaceTime. We get on FaceTime. You call her on FaceTime. That's not a problem. But like in this scenario, she was at home. And like I mentioned, she has an iPad. But when she was at the grocery store, this was an app she needed on her phone. So I helped her like install the app, and we were trying to configure it and get her logged in. And we're just struggling with it. So I'm like, get on FaceTime. She gets on FaceTime, and she answers FaceTime on her phone, but she's been installing the app and configuring it on the iPad, but she hadn't told me. So then she's like trying to aim the camera at the iPad, and she's like flipping the phone around, and I'm trying to describe to her how to flip the camera around, and she's not holding it close enough. So like, your mileage may vary. The moral of this story is your mileage may vary even if you're trying to screen share with like.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I love my mom to death, but she's just not a tech person. So right. I'm like, I'm going to be there next week. I'm going to show you all this stuff. We'll resolve it when I'm there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. I thought I was going to have to tell my dad, we might need to wait till Thanksgiving for this, but thankfully we were able, obviously, to get past it. So let's do some, because cool, it's the Porthos John episode, let's do some cool stuff found. And who better to start with than a cool stuff found from Porthos John? This one, this one definitely falls into the what will they think of next column, but it's kind of cool. And it is, it's called Ringo. It has nothing to do with the Ringo we all know and love. The stick wielding Ringo that we all know and love. I don't think, but it is a Ringo water bottle where the top of the water bottle has a flip up circle that is exactly the right size and shape and material construction that it is a MagSafe holder for your phone. So you get this MagSafe water bottle holder thing, and they say you have to take the whole top off to drink. So there is no straw mechanism on this. And the don't get caught note from Porthos John, and I think I'm attributing this to Porthos John accurately. I know there was a discussion about it. The Amazon listing for it, which it's about $60 on Amazon, it says it is stable when empty, and it kind of is. But if empty, okay. I would make sure you have it in a cup holder of some kind, as it is quite top heavy, which obviously makes sense.
So
I'll buy one if they make a version that has the bottom you can unscrew and stick a beer bottle up in there and put it back on.
Sure. There you go, Pete. Yep, that's the one.
They have those, by the way. Yeah. Not with the MagSafe holder on top.
No, but
it looks like a water bottle. You can enjoy your kid's soccer game a little more next week.
Wait, what's this?
They're fake water. They look like water bottles, but the bottom unscrews and you stick a beer bottle up in there and screw bottom on. And so, so
that's brilliant.
You have did you call one up?
I think so. It's called Sneaky Booze. It's a 36-ounce water bottle, diversion safe, stainless steel, portable coffee. No, this is just to put like your unmentionables in.
Oh, and it looks like cards and keys and stuff.
Yeah,
in the bottom.
This is not to put your beer in. But why couldn't you just get a water bottle that's built to hold carbonated beverages? And
there you go. And pour your beer in. That
relocate your beverage of choice into the water bottle.
Fair enough.
I don't know. Yeah. Like,
You could do that.
Yes,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
They have all kinds of stuff like this. I think somebody has like a split divider one too, where you put Coke in one side and, you know, bourbon on the other or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's a little switch that flips it.
So you can mix it,
or you could have solo, or you can mix it. Like
shaken, not stirred.
Love this.
Getting punchy.
Logic Pro 11.1 is out. And I love that Apple still is not charging for upgrades to Logic and Final Cut, right? Like they just keep adding things to these, and if you paid for it like a decade ago or whatever, you're on the list. You know, you're good.
Really?
Yeah. I don't use Logic for the show anymore, but I absolutely use it for recording music. And also, it's my mixer app for the studio when I have live rehearsals, which has the added benefit of, hey, you want to record that quick? Sure. Hit the button and boom, you're good to go. But I use it to just make sound come out of speakers and all those things. Logic Pro 11.1 adds two features functional features that I have wanted for a long time. One is you can finally reorder channel strips in the mixer. So if you have channels, it's super easy to just select channel strips, even non-adjacent channel strips, and just move them around. That's a game changer. Way easier than the other way of having to do it in the tracks area. So if you're using it as a mixer, you can just drag the things around. You don't have to go to the tracks area anymore. And number two, perhaps even bigger for me, is you can search for plugins by name. You don't have to know, I got to go to audio units and Isotope and RX10 voice denoise, or RX11 now, voice denoise. You know, you just search for RX11 and boom, it comes up. That's not their lead feature, but those are my lead features. Their lead feature is a cool reverb unit that they call the Quantech Room Simulator. This is used in studios around the world to create reverb sounds that actually sound like specific rooms or specific room types, as opposed to here's a plate reverb or here's a chamber reverb. This is using models to say here's what it would sound like in a room with these kinds of reflections and that sort of thing. So that's the Quantech Room Simulator. But the other two, the reordering channel strips, searching for plugins, those are the game changers to me. So just wanted to share that. It's fun. Shall we? We have two follow-up cool stuffs found from Bruce, and the one from Bruce that's maybe relevant here. He said in a last episode, a listener wrote in about their 2017 iMac. and what you thought they should do as it with it as it ages and can't run the latest Mac OS. Bruce says, as these older Mac age and the highest operating system that it run gets out of date, a geeky way to deal with this is to use OpenCore Legacy Patcher. And I know we've talked about this on the show before, and I always dismiss it. I mean, we mention it, but it just doesn't stick in my head. Bruce says there have been many hacks over the years of people trying to allow older Macs, most of which have stopped working. OCLP, OpenCore Legacy Patcher, is about the closest thing to a computer miracle that I've seen. This is what Bruce is saying. He says, I'm using it on my 2017 27-inch iMac primarily because I needed to run the latest version of Final Cut Pro, and older Mac OSs wouldn't allow it. And he's able to do it. Like, that, to me, is the... like the selling point of this. Like, okay, if the software you need to run, it's not just checking the box of, hey, I'm running the current OS, but you can't do anything with it. This actually, he's saying Final Cut Pro, which is a fairly resource intensive app, is okay running on the new OS via OCLP. So I think we need to remember this thing, and not I need to remember it, not dismiss it. So have you ever used it, Adam?
No, I usually upgrade before that date. I mean,
fair.
You have a really old Mac if you're running that thing, probably.
2017 like, and isn't I have an that old, Mac. Old.
Well, I have a 2019, and I feel like it's old at this point.
Only because of the Intel to Apple Silicon
Correct.
Switch.
Yeah. Correct.
I think 10 years now, with computers nowadays accepting that switch is the right age. So 2017 in and of itself doesn't seem old to me. But that switch obviously obsoleted some things before their time, I think. So
yeah, I mean, my Intel Mac is still running great, and I plan to use it for another couple of years. But I would imagine in 2 years I'm going to be ready to...
Yeah.
Like once I can't get the latest operating system on it, I'm probably dumping it.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a good time for it. Yeah.
But my observation is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Adam, you work with PC more than anybody here, but the Macs just seem to last much longer between upgrade cycles than most PCs.
Yeah, I think that's still mostly true. I think it's more because Apple, I believe, and I have to triple check this, but I'm pretty sure Apple does a better job with the operating system supporting older and older machines Windows even does currently. They're getting better though. I mean, all of it's getting better. Yeah. If I'm being fair.
My son's gaming rig is like 4 years old and he's already this last month.
Well, that's a
complete new motherboard and all that.
Yes,
stuff.
That's a separate thing though. Like gaming, all bets are off. You have to, if you're not running the latest CPU and more importantly, GPU, the very latest GPUs, you're done. With the latest games. Because every new game is pushing the total limits and for those guys, like if it's not doing 120, 240 frames a second or whatever, like, which I don't even understand that part of it, but maybe somebody could explain that to me one day, because I thought humans could only see a certain rate, like, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Go invest in NVIDIA, folks.
that's been true for a lot of reasons for a little while now. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
One last cool stuff found that's a follow-up from a previous episode. Tony reminds us in 1063, we had tons of great info on window management for Mac OS 15. An application, he says, that is similar to Moom that you mentioned is Better Snap from Full Evora. And Better Snap tool lets you move and resize any window to standard or custom locations with hot corners, hot zones, key combos. It's extremely configurable, available on the Mac App Store. And we will put a link to that in the show notes too. Yeah, I know we've talked about this one before too, but it's easy to kind of get into the routine of the ones we use and forget about the ones that we don't. But this one deserves to be considered. So
there's a lot of great tools out there.
I know
it's hard to like, it gets hard when someone wants you to recommend just one, because like everyone is kind of unique and has its own little features and things like that. So I think you just got to try them out and figure out which one works for you.
Yeah, which one fits your use case. I agree.
None of them are bad. That's you know, it's often the case in the Apple world, you know, with these third party tools, is lots of times it's like they're all great.
Yeah.
So, which is a great problem to have. It's like you're good with any one of them. Go for it.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh
man. Well, and of course, Porthos John has one more comment from the Discord. He said he offered his daughter's gaming rig with the last generation video card, and she scoffed. yeah, no thanks.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep. That's how it is. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Make sure to check out mattgeekgab.com/giveaway so you can see what our December giveaway is. I also, this might be premature, but I feel okay about it. I want to begin thanking the folks who are sponsoring us for CES and allowing that trip to actually work. And the first sponsor that came in is, of course, none other than the folks at Bombic Software with Carbon Copy Cloner, a.k.a. CCC Backup. So nice. Big thanks to them for stepping in. And there will be more. We'll share those as they come in. But yeah, I'm thinking.
Awesome.
Yeah. CCC is like, I haven't checked my email while we're doing the show, but I'm pretty sure they're in. I think it's safe to say that. I've said it. I might now if they're not,
they have to do it.
Now they have to be, right. Yeah, exactly. Now they look bad. No. If people, there's many reasons people can't do sponsorships and timing and all that. It's always fine. So we love the folks that are able to currently sponsor us. And we also love the folks that have sponsored, like last year, CCC was also the first on board to sponsor us for our CES trip. And those trips aren't possible without, time investment and certainly financial investment to pay for the whole trip. So we try to be pretty fair with our sponsors. We don't look at them as huge profit centers or anything. We just need to get our costs offset and make it so the trip is smooth and silky. So, yeah, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Check out Adam's show, the debut film podcast. Check out Pete's show, So There I Was. Check out my other shows, Business Brain and Gig Gab. Fun stuff coming up on all of those shows. Yeah, there we are. Reviews, mattgeekgab.com/reviews. We love your reviews. Love them. We'll share more in an upcoming episode. Until then, do you have anything to share there from Anchorage, Pete?
Well, maybe I'd like to start by wishing people retroactively a happy Thanksgiving. Sure. Hope it was great. And don't get caught.
It may not.